Welcome to the Nature Reliance Podcast, where we explore the history and practical experience of the great outdoors and discover new ways to connect with nature. I'm Craig Cottle, your guide through the fascinating world of natural living and survival skills through experiential education and interviews. Today's episode is brought to you by the Nature Reliance School Online Membership, an immersive online learning experience designed for outdoor enthusiasts just like you. Are you passionate about the outdoors? Do you crave more knowledge about disaster readiness, wilderness survival, bushcraft, tracking, and nature awareness? If so, the Nature Reliance School Online Membership is your gateway to a community of like-minded individuals, all dedicated to learning and sharing essential outdoor skills. With the Nature Reliance School Online Membership, you get exclusive access to a wealth of resources, including expert-led tutorials, interactive webinars, and a library of engaging courses, downloadable books, and documents. Whether you're a beginner or an experienced outdoorsman, there's always something new to learn. So don't wait. Click on the link below to join the Nature Reliance School Online Membership today. Embrace the wilderness, enhance your skills, and become part of a community that values nature as much as you do. Now, let's dive into today's episode. Don't you just love a bunch of ticks just crawling all over you and biting you and giving you these diseases that they give off and all that kind of fun stuff? No, not me either, man. Not me either. So that's why I've got Brian Anderson on today. Brian is the tick terminator. I mean, this dude is a nerd for ticks. I mean, a good kind of nerd, if you know what I mean. He knows his ticks. I got Brian on to talk about several different things. The first thing we go into, we discuss where ticks are in the environment, what kind of things do they like to thrive in. We also take a look at preventative measures related to not only just avoiding them, but hey, is there something we can do with our clothes to avoid them? Are there essential oils? He answers that question. Are there chemicals that we can utilize that are better than others? And one of the biggest things I learned from this one is what the 40%, 60%, or even 100% DEET means. It's not what you think. So I'm glad you're here. When we come back on, we're going to have Brian from the Tick Terminator with us. Enjoy. All right, Brian, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. I've seen you on numerous things over the years and YouTube videos. So it's always nice to see your face in real life here. You know what I mean? Pretty cool.
Yeah. This has been good, man. I love people that are helping people get outside. And at this point in time, ticks are a problem, and it's good that you're doing a lot of dedicated work to helping people keep ticks off of them, for sure.
Yeah, it's a job that will never end.
So if you don't care, go ahead and give a background of who you are, what you're doing related to ticks and all that kind of good stuff, and we'll get going.
Well, what I tell people, I am basically a tick and Lyme disease prevention specialist, which essentially makes me a consultant, an author, a conference speaker, podcast guest, and so on. And I help a lot of companies with outdoor workers, like linemen, people like that, power companies, and, loggers and things like that of that nature. Plus a lot of what I call outdoor enthusiasts. So that covers a wide range from campers to backpackers to hikers, to just – I mean, somebody actually even weeding their garden, because ticks are so broad. And then I also help them with unique and cost-effective repellents. So that's kind of my elevator speech, if you want to call it, in a nutshell there. That's pretty much what I do. So it's an awful lot of fun.
So I should have said in the beginning, for those that are listening on what's happening here with Brian, we'll have links to his website and all his cool stuff in the description below. So you can look for that. So make sure you're looking for that. But so let's talk about ticks first. Does that sound good?
Sure.
So, as far as ticks are concerned, let's not talk about the repellents yet. Let's get to that in a minute.
Oh, sure.
What do ticks like to be in? What kind of environment do they thrive in? Where are we likely to find ticks?
You're going to find them more in a wooded environment. Ticks need moisture to survive. So they're going to be in low-lying vegetation, grassy, ferns and things like that. You're not going to find them out in the middle of an asphalt parking lot, for example. That's too hard on them, They need that cover, that protection. So that's where you're going to find them the first. I mean, if you're walking down the trail, in the woods, to stay away from them, stay on the trail because there's no brush right there. I mean, unless it's a brushy trail, but if it's a well-worn trail, but hey, if you got to step off the trail to when nature calls, so to speak, you may want to definitely check there. But yeah, low-lying vegetation and brush. Ticks do not jump. They don't fly. They don't drop out of trees. They are what we call opportunists. They sit in a blade of grass or some kind of vegetation. They have eight legs. So six of those legs are going to wrap around that vegetation. The other two are going to kind of stick out and kind of monitor what comes by. And hopefully it's something with blood so that they can, latch onto and look around that mammal, whatever it may be, us or animals, and have a meal for a few days.
So
So.
what is it about the water that attracts them to it? Why do they like moisture?
They need that to survive. Otherwise, they would dry up
Okay.
and just
So no
die.
different than us in hydration. There's not anything in particular. It's just hydration. They need hydration just like we do.
Yeah, they're going to tend to be in more places that are going to have some moisture. That's about as simple as I can say it, I guess.
Okay. Good.
So.
Good. All right, so are there places where they'll be more numerous? Like, do they have nesting areas where you might get into a, a lot of people say, I got a met into a mess of ticks today. Why do people say that? Are they running into a nest of them? What's happening there?
Well, it depends on what they define as a nest. Basically, when a female tick gives birth, she could give birth to those pretty much any place. Okay, a couple years ago, we had a family gathering. I live in a very rural area, 100 miles north of Green Bay in Upper Michigan. It's a very rural area here, and my brother lives in the woods, kind of in the woods, and they were sitting around. The adults watching the kids play like volleyball or something. And all of a sudden, one of the adult girls started noticing these little brown specks crawling up her legs. And it kind of surprised us all. And those are ticks that had probably just been born probably a few weeks before that. And she went and washed them all off, and they were ticks. Now, that was in a mowed lawn in the grass, where you would not think they would be, but they were. Because it was a very woody environment, the tick probably fell off a deer walking through there and decided they're gonna give birth to these babies right there. So otherwise they're in wooded areas typically. They run into a batch and there could be thousands of them because they're little brown specks. Maybe I should talk about the life cycle of a tick since I'm talking so much
Yeah,
about that.
please do. Go ahead.
But the life cycle of a tick is essentially, what we're just talking about here. A female gives birth to anywhere between 1,000 to 5,000 eggs at a time, typically in around June or so. And after about 2 weeks, they hatch out of the eggs. Now, I don't know why they give birth to so many, but that's how God made it. And I wish it would have been only 100, but it could be anywhere between 1,000 and 5,000 eggs at a time,
Do
wherever
they
she
give
happens to
birth
be.
in more in wet? Do they do that in a puddle? They do that in the grass? Do you know?
No, not in a pot. I mean, just on the forest floor in this my brother's yard, that was mowed. And then after a couple of weeks, they wake up or they hatch out of the egg, and then they start to look for their first host. Now, when you're in a ground like that, their opportunities for hosts are very limited. So typically, their first blood meal is going to come from a little. Basically, a white-footed mouse that run mice that run all over the woods, So they get on that mouse, start sucking the blood out of it, and then the germs that come from that mouse that go into the tick is what actually will give them a disease because they are born disease-free, which a
Oh,
lot of people
interesting. I didn't know
realize.
that.
So the germs from the mouse they go into the tick. If they're going to get something, is normally that's how they get it. So they are on that mouse for a couple days, 2, 3, 4 days. They get off and do whatever ticks do, which ain't a whole lot. And they just kind of sit back and kick back and relax for months and months at a time. In this area, it could be the fall, the winter, come out the next spring, the size of a poppy seed. Okay. Teeny tiny. So now, if they got any kind of tick-borne disease the summer before, they can be just as lethal as a tick-borne, as a poppy seed size as they are an adult. You don't have to be big to be bad, is what you're saying here. Okay. So size doesn't even matter in the tick world. So that
Okay.
little tiny tick, the size of a poppy seed that could be on your shoelaces and you wouldn't even hardly see it, could get on you and bite you and could possibly give you a disease. So then that tick gets on some the size of poppy seed ticks that next summer, spring, could be us, could be some mammal, feeds for a few days, gets off, just chills out for the fall, winter, come out the next spring, a size of an adult. And now we can see them better. All right. Remember, they eat one time a year, most ticks in our area, pretty much eastern half of the United States. I'm not going to get into the other ones, but there are other ones that eat differently than most of them. Okay. I'm covering most of them here.
Sure.
So anyways, adult sized tick could get on us, could get on a deer, some, big animal like that. And say they're on a deer, they would feed and then they mate. Then they ride that deer typically over the winter, come up the next spring, the male gets off, he dies, female gets off, and she gives birth anywhere between 1,000 to 5,000 eggs, and that's enough to kill anybody, and she's history, and then she dies. So their typical lifestyle, if they eat once a year on a host for several days, they can live 3 years. It's their typical lifestyle. So the
Yeah.
nice thing about when we were talking about those little, some people call them a seed tick. This basically when they're first born, basically a speck of brown that kind of moves a little bit, if you ever get bit by one of those, count your blessings because you didn't, you can't get any disease from them because they have not gotten a disease yet at that point in their life. So that's the
Okay.
only good thing about that. But a lot of times people get bit by multiples of those, they could have 40, 50 of them on them pretty easily. But
Right.
if you had erythrin on the clothes that they crawl on, man, that's going to wipe them out even quicker. But yeah, that's
So if I'm listening to you properly or understanding you properly, the first order of business is to avoid them, from my opinion. And we can avoid them by avoiding wooded areas, and particularly wooded areas where there's a fair amount of moisture, because they love that. That's their jam. That's where they're going to find them, where we're going to find them more often than anything, correct?
Yeah, and that's most of the woods. Most any kind of woods that's shaded is going to have some kind of moisture in it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. The worst ticks I ever got into were, and this is such an anomaly of an experience, I really don't know the reasoning, is my whole family, when my kids were little, we got into a, like, we had hundreds of ticks on each one of us, including the dog, where we went to study an area that had a forest fire, and we were just kind of seeing what plants were coming back. And everything was just dry as a gourd. And I've often wondered if the fire had pushed the ticks out to the edge where we walked in off the road, because we only walked in maybe 10 yards and then got back in the vehicle. We weren't out 5 minutes, and then we were covered in ticks.
Wow.
And I've often wondered if maybe the fire had pushed them off to one side and we just walked right into the middle of them or something. It was terrible, terrible.
That's unusual. The fire, I mean, I even in my book, I wrote a little bit about fire can limit ticks. I mean, if you do controlled burns, and I'm not recommending this, if anybody does it, make sure to talk to all the right precautions, the neighborhood fire people or whatever, but you can do controlled burns, and that eliminates ticks for several years in most cases.
Oh, really? Interesting.
Yeah,
What about
controlled
this
burns pretty good.
cold weather? I mean, up in Michigan, it's not warm a good portion of the year. Does cold weather affect ticks? I mean, I know ticks are out 12 months out of the year, but that
Not
does.
much at all. You see,
Okay.
what happens is ticks in our area here. About 32 degrees is approximately where they kind of come and go. All right. You have now, what state are you in again?
Kentucky.
Okay, that's what I thought. Now you could have ticks even in the wintertime too.
Yeah, we do.
Because yeah, you get temperatures pretty regularly, probably in the 40s, or better or warmer. For us here, we typically get down to 0 and 10, 20 below sometimes. But what
So
ticks do
that
in
won't,
winter,
if I'm understanding you correctly, that doesn't have any effect on their population, it getting that cold. What are
no,
the, do they
because
go dormant?
what I'm going to describe here, because what happens is ticks in about November, they after our deer season in December, they dive down under the leaf litter, okay, And snow comes over and is a wonderful insulator. And God gave them this special little enzyme that works like antifreeze that kind of circulates in their system so they do not freeze to death. I wish they did, but they don't.
Interesting.
And in our area, that's for sure. They'd have to be like up in the Alaskan tundra, which they really don't have any ticks up there to speak of. I mean, cold, 20, 30, 40 below for weeks on end, and then that without any cover on them, and then they can die. But in our area, no, they don't die because they can survive the winter. What happens here is they come out sometimes in January thaw where it gets up to 50 degrees, or a February thaw. They will come out, and it's not uncommon to come out through the snow and get stuck on dogs on occasion. So, and I know you don't have that much snow down there. You get it on occasion, I'm sure, but
We
you're
do,
not
but
going to
not
have
like you
much snow
all.
either, typically. Yeah. So yeah, they don't die off here in the lower 48.
Interesting. Yeah, that's good
Yeah.
to know. I know a lot of people ask me that because where I'm out 12 months out of the year, I see ticks all the time. And so
Yeah.
it's that doesn't surprise me, but it seems like it's a surprise to most people to realize that ticks are out in the wintertime. So it's good to know that it's that 32 degree mark is that come and go line, huh?
Pretty much so, yeah. I mean, some people think they're like bears where they just hibernate, they don't come out, Well, guess what? They do, yeah, they're not totally gone. I wish they were.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Hey guys and gals, a quick break in our episode to talk about a game changer in outdoor cooking, the Fire Maple Backpacking and Camping Stove System. Whether you're hiking, fishing, or even prepping for emergencies, this portable pot and jet burner is a must-have in your gear. Best part, it's nearly half the price of a comparable Jetboil stove system. Thanks to its leading heat exchange technology, you'll experience reduced boiling times by up to 30% compared to traditional stoves, even in windy conditions. That means more time enjoying the outdoors and less time cooking. Are you ready to upgrade your outdoor cooking game? Click the link in the description now to grab yours. Trust me, your outdoor adventures will never be the same.
All right, so let's talk about some of these diseases that come from ticks. Lyme disease, which I've had. Rocky Mountain spotted fever, I've had it. Alpha gal, which I don't have, but I do have friends that have. Let's talk about them. Tell me about them.
I mean, I tell people there's diseases like anaplasmosis, babesiosis, ehrlichiosis, tularemia, like you said, Rocky Mountain spotted fever, Powassan, alpha gal, like you talked about, and Lyme. Lyme is probably the worst because sometimes people end up literally dying from complications with Lyme disease. It can be that bad. Sometimes it can be fatal. And then other ones can be handled pretty well. Alpha gal syndrome is, I'm sure you're probably a meat eater.
I am.
And alpha gal syndrome, for the people listening, they may not realize that comes from a lone star tick, has a little white dot on its back. And incidentally, in the tick area, the tick business, it's the females that generally bite humans. The males sometimes will bite animals, but in most cases, we're getting bit by a female tick.
Why is
And
that?
I don't know why it is, but that's just what it is. And
Interesting.
the female tick is generally bigger than the male also. I don't know why, but that's just what it is. But the Lone Star tick is a female tick with a little white dot on its back. And that's the one where people can get alpha gal syndrome. All right. And I was just giving a presentation here just a few days ago in Virginia, and talking to some safety directors from some co-ops down there. And I wanted to bring that up because one of the guys there, his wife had alpha gal syndrome several years ago. And another guy knew somebody too that had alpha gal syndrome. And so then I tell him something else here. I said, I don't know if you guys realize this, but alpha gal syndrome is one of those things where some acupuncture treatments has been helping some people be able to reintroduce red meats back into their diet. Okay. So
Interesting.
there's some help with acupuncture in alpha gal syndrome situations. Notice how I'm being very careful. I'm not saying it's going to cure it,
But
this guy's wife has definitely had some success with that. If somebody has it listening to that, they may want to talk to an acupuncturist about possibly getting some relief that way. This guy lived in Virginia, and I remember they had some good acupuncturists there that were helping people there through. It was kind of interesting.
Yeah, and Alpha Gale sometimes you are relieved of some of the complications later on. Some people have it forever, but I do know a couple of people that there were two foresters that I know, one in National Forest and one state forestry that got Alpha Gale. They were both deer, big deer hunters too, loved to eat red meat and couldn't for a while, but they both overcame it later. I don't know, I'm not a medical professional, so I can't say what happened to them, but they eventually got past that. They could eat red meat again.
That's good. They're very fortunate. So many tick-borne disease are really tough to get rid of. I mean, Lyme is I mean, it almost if somebody has chronic Lyme, they almost have it for the rest of their life. They basically learn how to live with it and help lessen the issues with it. But that's a tough one
One of
to
the things that helped me was that we had so many on us that we immediately went to the doctor. We tested for antibodies for Lyme disease and we tested positive for them. And they just immediately put us on a pretty significant regimen of antibiotics. But where we had caught it so early, and again, this is everybody in my family, me and my wife and my kids. We haven't, as far as I know, had complications from it. But, we were at the doctor taking antibiotics the day after we found all the ticks.
It,
So
when
I
I
think.
give when I give presentations, I come to the end. That's what I end the presentation with, is what to do if you get bit. And the biggest thing I harp at people and preach about is early detection and early treatment, because you did the exact right thing right there. A painful lifestyle, living forever or something like that is not fun at all. So taking care of it like you did right in the very beginning. A lot of times doctors, even if they got a let's say you get bit by a tick, and let's say you really don't have any symptoms yet, okay, but maybe you have a bullseye rash, or maybe the bite flares up, maybe your elbow swells up or your knee swells up, you got it, down there. It's really kind of weird. And a lot of times Lyme disease tests are very inaccurate. So many times they're, a Western blot test and an ELISA test are the two main ones, but a lot of times those tests are they're very inconclusive or false negative, false positive. So a lot of times a good doctor like yours will put somebody on the antibiotics just to be safe. And most of the time people go on it's called doxycycline. That's probably what you were on, I would assume.
It was.
That's the gold standard for and I'm not a doctor and I don't play one on TV here either, But that is the most popular one, and as far as I guess the world of antibiotics, it's a more of a mild one, so that can be dispensed, by doctors, very freely, and that normally will almost always get rid of it in the beginning. And a lot of times, people will go on for a couple weeks worth of maybe where you were, sometimes 14 to 21 days of that stuff, and that's enough normally to just knock it out of the system. But if you were to wait 3, 4 months, and then have even more symptoms, and then finally have a positive test, then you almost have it for life. I mean, I hate to be blunt, but it's early detection, early treatment is the absolute most important thing to do. When in doubt, go to a doctor and have it checked out, or get on some antibiotics to be safe even.
So you mentioned the bull's eye rash, so that's valid. That's an indicator.
Absolutely. That's not all Lyme disease gets that, and maybe only 40 or 50% of them you get that Lyme, that bullseye rash. I mean, symptoms from tick bites could be bullseye rash, achy joints, flu-like symptoms, feeling crappy, brain fog, Bell's palsy, where kind of half your face hangs, your vision goes blurry. Man, I've heard everything. And there's all kinds of different symptoms, but I tell people, if you're bit by a tick, and if you know you got bit by a tick, sometimes people get bit by a tick and they don't even know it. Especially if you know you got bit by a tick, watching that bite for a couple days, because sometimes people react to it almost overnight and have really, uncomfortable the next couple days. And so that's a real sign to see a doctor. But watching it, you know, if it reacts any kind bad, you know, that people know how they react to it, like a mosquito bite. It may be puffy a little bit for a couple hours, then go away. But if that tick bite acts funny, do not ignore that. I mean, take that seriously by all means. Yeah, for sure.
Sure.
So,
Yeah, that's a great recommendation to get in and seen early. The earlier the better.
yeah.
Yeah.
And while we're talking about that, I got to show you my little pet tick that I talked to you about.
Sure.
The way you take a tick off can also make a difference. Okay, so I show like I have this tick. For people who can't see me right now, just audio, I got a tick. I don't know how big it is. Probably, you know, about 5, 6 inches long. It's all stuffed like a little teddy bear. Only it's a tick. The way you take a tick off, you wanna be nice to it. Okay, because if you make it mad by spinning it around, doing all the old wives' tales, you know, like Vaseline or fingernail polish or a match or all kinds of different things like that, you're going to irritate it. The sooner you get a tick off, also, the better. Daily tick checks during tick season are very important. The longer a tick stays on you, the more apt it is to give you some bad stuff. All right. So then let's say you find a tick on you that day. You want to grab at the very, very base, let's say with a fine tip tweezers. You don't want to grab it by the body because you grab by the body and you're more apt to kind of squeeze the bad stuff out of you as you're pulling it off. Think of somebody grabbing it on your waist, your stomach, you know what I mean? You know, you're kind of more apt to vomit that way. So grab it at the very base, pull it straight up. Don't spin around, do all that kind of stuff. I tell people, you don't want to tick off a tick when you're trying to take it off from yourself. You don't
That's
want to
good.
make it bad, you know? So take it off, and you may want to save the tick. You know, you may want to put it in a piece of a piece of tape. At least take a picture of it, anyways, too. I don't care if you shoot it with a 30-06, you know, but just have some kind of memory of that tick, so that if you do, you know, go to a doctor, if that's the case, at least you can show them what kind of tick it was.
Right.
So. But taking it off and then monitor that bite area, and that, like I was just saying, but be nice to when you take it off, you know. Don't want to make it mad and have it puke that bad stuff in you right at the point you're taking it off. That's for sure. Does that
So is
make
there
sense?
Oh yeah, it makes perfect sense. Is there a possibility of pulling the body off and the what's the biter called? Whatever stuck in you stays in
Yeah.
there?
A little bit of the head sometimes may stay in your body, but you know, the body will naturally kind of, you know, get rid of that in a couple days. You can wash it off with, you know, rubbing alcohol or soap and water, that the little bite wound, if you want to call it that. But yeah, it's and then just watch that. That's for sure. But yeah, glad you
Good
asked
stuff.
about that.
All right, let's go into preventative stuff then. All the permethrins, DEET, Picaridin, and all that stuff. What's good? What's the best? What should we avoid because it does nothing? Tell me about it.
There's, even on my website, I list different ways that people can, you know, different repellents people can use. They can use essential oils, you know, garlic, I mean, citronella, you know, lavender, things like that. Those are all what I call daily applications, okay? Those are what some people use that really want to be natural, and hey, that's okay. You got to put those on quite a bit. But those aren't too bad. I like something that I can put on and last a long time. Otherwise, people come out with let's say
Now, those essential oils actually work.
they can
And what are they doing? Are they repelling them, or do they
the
find that
smell.
the smell bothers them?
Yep, the smell they don't like, right? Like citrus. I was talking to, I did a TV show a couple years ago, a little segment on an outdoor show, a hunting and fishing show. And this guy was, when we were talking about the fact that ticks don't like citrus, he says, "Brian, you're kidding me." I said, "No." He says, "Brian, you're not going to believe this, but I love to drink Sun Drop soda." He says, "I drink 6 bottles of Sun Drop soda a day." You know,
Gross.
so
Gosh, that's disgusting.
I'm thinking, "You're crazy, man." So, anyways,
Was he
I
saying
said,
that that was keeping ticks off of him?
well, I don't know if it is, but I said, man, that you drinking so much is probably coming out of your pores. And to a tick, you stink like a sewer. No wonder you never get bit, because he says he never gets bit by ticks. I said, count your blessings, baby, because that's a wonderful, thing to have. But whether it does it or not, I'm not sure. I'm not endorsing to drink sun drops surrounded by
Right.
six bottles
Well,
every
I'm
day
just
either.
saying right now, I don't.
Yeah, well, I
I'm
don't
not
either.
endorsing that at all. That's funny,
Oh,
though.
that's one guy, okay. And anyways, yeah, just they go by the scent of smell. Like for example, DEET, it was created in 1945 for a military. And the way DEET works is the scent, the smell, the aroma. When let's say mosquitoes fly towards us, they're going to sense that smell, and it screws up their little antennas and tricks them and says there's no blood there, so then they fly off. So that's how it works. Now, DEET, incidentally, a lot of people don't realize this. You get 25%, up to 100%. The only difference in the percentages is how long it will last on you. It's not any stronger. It's just more lasting, well, lasts a little longer. So 100% DEET may last another couple hours more than a 25% DEET. But I prefer to wear a 25% DEET when I'm using it, because
So
sometimes
that's all.
DEET can be a little harsh
So it's not
on
a higher
plastic.
concentration at all. It's just a length of time it can stay on you.
Correct. Most people never know that, but that's what it is.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
Picaridin,
Enter.
yeah. Picaridin is a good thing too.
Hang on, hang on, hang on. I got questions about DEET. So how's the best way to apply it for ticks? Clothes, skin. What's the best way
you
to
could
apply it?
you can do both. I mean, you got aerosols. It depends on what your form it's in. I mean, if it's in lotion, it's going to be on your hands. If it's in a spray, like a moistening, it's going to be. It could be on either or. Wipes, obviously, is going to be for skin. Some people use DEET. They spray it all over the clothes to try to repel ticks. Same thing with Picaridin and IR3535. Those three are all like the top three best mosquito repellents, and they're okay for ticks. But yeah, that's does that answer your question there?
Yeah. So I see, is it Picaridin? Is
Yeah.
that how you say it? Okay, Picaridin. I see it oftentimes in lotion. So I've used that on my skin, and I avoid putting permethrin on my skin. I mean, it's not like I feel like I'm going to die if I get it on my skin. But one entomologist at the University of Kentucky told me and helped me understand this. He said to use permethrin, to use it on your clothes, but to make sure it dries. It serves you well when it's dried on your clothing rather than just, I see a lot of people get out and just spray it on their clothes. And he was saying from his research that that did not work as well.
He's right as far as it's more preferable to have it dry in your clothes. Say, put them on a clothesline and spray it down. Yeah, that's the best way. That's the way I recommend it.
Do you know
But then
why?
I
Because
also
I did not ask him why. I don't understand why. And it maybe it's not important to understand why, but why is it better when it dries?
well, I don't know if it's better, because it's supposed to work wet as well as it works dry. I
Okay.
mean, ticks are still. I mean, if I stand here and I spray down right now on the spot, and I'm walking through the woods, and my clothes are still a little damp, it's still going to work. It's still going to be effective. But it's way more convenient to have it dry. The bottles, I was every bottle that you dispense it out of is going to say, "Don't spray it while your clothes are being worn." So he's given a good advice. There's no question about that. That's the best way to do it. But it'll work either way, wet or dry.
Okay.
Because I know a lot of people who do that, and I said, well, okay, if you're going to do it that way, yeah, it'll still work, because the ticks are going to be crawling on that.
So is there different concentrations of permethrin, just like there's different concentrations of DEET? Because I know you can buy, like we used to put basically permethrin on the back of cattle to keep flies off of them back when I was farming quite a bit. And I'm assuming that's just permethrin solid or something. I don't know, because that stuff was terribly smelling.
Well, actually, that's you're bringing to a good point there, because permethrin was created in like 1973. Okay, permethrin is basically a synthetic version of pyrethrum, which is a naturally occurring insect repellent that's found in a chrysanthemum flower. Okay, so now we're not going to chop up flowers and sprinkle that flower dust on us, but in 73 they made it more convenient for us to use. you know, as Americans. I mean, we like something cheap and expensive and easy to use, but with very little directions, you know, us men, right, especially. But they created four different formulations for it. One of them is for farmers to put on their crops to keep bugs off. Another one is for farmers to put on their cattle in barn areas to keep bugs off. Another one is for doctors to use for licensed scabies. All right. And then the fourth version is for one we're really talking about now that the military's been using for decades, US and British military both. And for us as humans, we can use our put on our clothing and gear. Now, what some people use is they use the stuff, the farm grade on their clothes, which is not designed for that. Okay. I mean, you look at the container, it's just talks all about farms. Okay.
Right. So
And
that's a
that's
totally
where
different formulation.
it is a different formulation. Yeah, it's a little greasier, it's a little more smelly, and it's not the same consistency as the concentrate that I work with. So
Because I've
I'm
seen people buy that at Tractor Supply, Rural
oh
King,
yeah.
you know, and create buckets of this stuff and soak their clothes in it. So that's probably not the best use of that at all.
It'll work that way, but it's
Yeah.
not designed for that.
Okay.
You know,
Gotcha.
I like to think that the one that we use, I not like to think, I know, it's the one, it's the only, we have a 10% permethrin also that I work with that I gave you the sample of there that is designed for clothing and gear. That's the purpose of it.
Okay.
And especially if any hunters are listening, they like the odor-free aspect of it too. And the
Yeah.
fact that it's designed for clothing and gear. And so we actually have the only permethrin concentrate on the market designed for clothing and gear where you can mix it to your liking, to your how long you want to last. For example, let's say a typical permethrin that you buy at a sporting goods store or Walmart or whatever is good when you spray on your clothes for 6 weeks and six washes. I know you're very familiar with that. Nothing wrong with that at all. Ours, you can basically mix. You get a little bottle of concentrate and a little a bottle, you know, a measuring cup, and you pour that in a 32-ounce spray bottle. The more you put in there, the longer it will last. I typically treat my clothes for 12 weeks and 12 washes, so basically 3 months at a time, which is really handy. And
So is that stuff that you've come up with a formula, or
no,
okay, gotcha. Is that
I didn't come
something
up with
that
that formula.
people can buy anywhere? Where do you get that?
Well, you get it from my website. That's probably the easiest place to get
Sure.
it.
Okay. Yeah, sure. We like supporting people that come on.
TheTickTerminator.com, and this is basically what it looks like right here,
Okay.
like I was just describing. I'll
So for
show.
those that can't see that are listening just on the podcast, I'll have a link down below on where you can get this Duration permethrin.
Yeah, it comes with a little this 8 ounce bottle and a little a measuring cup here. The more of those you put into the It also comes with a 32-ounce bottle that you mix it with. So the more of those cups you put in there, the longer it will last. It comes with directions also, so you can know how much you want. I mean, the nice cool thing about it also is that it cuts your permethrin cost by like 50% because we're not shipping the water. It's a concentrate, you know? So for example, let's say mom knows when their kids are going to summer camp for a week. They could mix it at the smallest version, which is 3 weeks. Why should she waste it and mix it for 12 weeks when they're only going to use the clothes for 1 week?
Right.
So she's really saving money on that. So it depends on what the needs are of somebody, but it's a great product. Because did I describe yet how permethrin works?
You did.
How your the ticks crawl up the clothes. Every step they take drives their nervous system nuts.
Oh, no, you didn't describe this part of it. Go
That's
ahead.
what I thought. Yeah, they feel like they're walking on an electric grid. Okay, the longer they walk on, the more seconds. I mean, typically after about usually way less than a minute, typically they're gonna fall off and die or die and fall off. But if those clothes have been treated well with permethrin, they've been walking on it for quite some time. There's numerous videos out there of people, you know, walking on permethrin. Or I should say ticks walking on permethrin, and they start wobbling around after they've been on that, you know, 20, 30 seconds. They act like they're drunk, but it's because the permethrin is working on their system. and they can't take it very much longer, and they'll fall off, and that's the end of them.
I can
So
say
if
for a
you
fact that I have seen that happen numerous times, watched it happen. It's
Oh, I have
I
too.
didn't realize they were hitting the it was hitting the nervous system. I always wondered what it was doing. Interesting.
Yep. It's their nervous system. I
Yeah.
watched a black fly land on my thigh a couple of years ago with my jeans that were of course treated with permethrin. And that's a fly. So he was dancing around, and they call it the hot feet syndrome, high stepping, because it was thinking, what the heck am I landing on you? I can't stand this, you know? So it eventually flew off, and I say, cha-ching, I won, because it didn't bite me. So the permethrin was working on even flying insects like mosquitoes. If they land on a permethrin treated garment, apparel, shirt, pants, they're going to sense the same thing. So they're going to fly off. So if permethrin was on the clothing, and let's say DEET or Picaridin or IR3535, something like that, was on the skin, that's the best, bug repellent that you can do. So, but
Nice.
permethrin should not should you shouldn't spray it on your skin, because for one thing, the natural oils will actually, break it down and dissipate, and it's useless after like 15 minutes. And the worst something because something happened to them is they may get a little red spot there for a while, and then it goes away. There's no long-lasting effects to speak of at all. So,
Yeah,
I mean,
the United States military has done a considerable amount of research on it on the skin
oh.
just to see, and it's incredible. It can be so problematic for insects, but not problematic for us. I'm sure if you drank bottles of the stuff, you'd die. But
Yeah.
it's like everything. I mean, if you sat and sprayed permethrin on your skin over and over and over again all day, every day, you probably have problems. But you'd probably have problems if you did that with ketchup too. So I mean, it's
I mean, common sense.
yeah. Right,
Yeah,
right.
that's a good way to put it. Yeah, but that's how permission works.
I would have one word of caution, and you didn't say this. It's just something I experienced. We were training a group of guys from on the federal level one time, and one of the guys was new to being in the outdoors, and he soaked his hat in permethrin. And then we went about doing the mission, and he got hot and sweaty, and then got permethrin in his eyes. That is a problem. That is a serious problem. So I tell people to never put those things on their hats if they think they're going to get in the rain or ever sweat ever in their life. Because I don't like having stuff buzzing around my ears either. That's why I like putting Picaridin on my ears in lotion form. But don't put it on your hat because you'll eventually get it in your eyes. That's bad news.
Well, he may have sprayed it on really, really thick. You said he soaked it in there?
Well, when I say he soaked it, he just sprayed it on his hat. But
Okay.
I mean, it's right after we left doing the work we were doing, I mean, he was everything that was in his hat was coming out because he was sweating bad, like really bad.
Wow.
Yeah, that's not good. We had to extract him even. We had to call medical in to get him out because he couldn't make it. He basically went blind temporarily because he could not keep his eyes open. Not because
Wow.
the permethrin was making him blind, it's just any chem. I mean, it was just like the same thing with ketchup. If somebody put ketchup in his eyes, it blinded him temporarily. Same thing.
Because I generally put on like a little baseball cap, but I'm not soaking it. I mean, I've never had a problem with it like that.
Yeah, if
But
you don't want to put too much on and you don't want to sweat a lot after you put it on there because it'll come out in the sweat. Yeah, I've had this happen to more than just that guy before. That's just one precaution I like
interesting.
sharing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good one.
So we got
Definitely.
permethrin, we got Picaridin, you mentioned one, a bunch of numbers and letters. What was that?
IR3535.
What is that? I
That
don't think I know what that is at all.
that's kind of a version of insect repellent. Those are
Okay.
probably the top three, those different ones, the DEET, the Picaridin, and IR3535. So
And
those are
you can
the
buy
top.
that just like you can the others, just civilians can buy that no wherever.
Yeah, you can
Okay.
get it in certain spots. Our company is coming out with one that's going to be very unique here. Maybe this summer, I'm not sure yet, but it's not on my website right now. But it's supposed to last, I mean, a long time, almost double what everything else lasts, as far as
And
the deck.
that's the stuff that you're describing right there, IR.
Yeah,
Yeah.
and you put it on your skin. It feels like hand lotion. It's really nice. You don't even realize. Yeah, and it has a nice little feel to it. I've never felt anything like it, so I'm very anxious for them to come out with that. But yeah, that's
Nice.
supposed to last like 16 some hours, which is,
Get out of here. That's cool as heck.
yeah, I've used some samples of it last summer. I mean, our bugs are just starting to come out now around here, and it's a nice stuff. I mean, I probably shouldn't even be talking about it right now, so, but since
Yeah.
you sit there, I don't have it on my website, but I do have
Okay.
some DEET and some picaridin, I think, on there. I don't have a
Okay.
whole lot of different repellents because permethrin is like the cornerstone. That's where everything almost begins. So I wanted to say that before we were talking about the DEET and those other sprays. Those are okay for ticks, but then nothing compares to permethrin. Permethrin is in a category all its own. Works differently. It works. They call it a contact repellent. Okay. Where the other ones work based on the scent, the smell, the aroma, like DEET, but permethrin works as a contact repellent. That means they only notice it when they come in contact with it. All right. So then the bugs, the chiggers or ticks or mosquitoes that land on it or crawl up on it drives their nervous system nuts. If they were ever to make it to the skin, they're going to be so incapacitated that it's going to be really hard for them to really be a problem and bite. I tell people you want to put permethrin on those clothes, and definitely, I know you're already a believer in that anyways, but that's how I want to kind of explain it. It's a contact repellent because
Okay.
when it dries, it's odorless, which is nice.
Question for you, and this might be outside your specialty, but I read recently where there's a possibility of coming up with a basically a tick vaccine kind of thing. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, they've always worked on been working on stuff like that. They had one about probably 20 plus years ago that they had a little bit of problems with, so they discontinued it. The problem is getting a vaccine to, okay, if we get a vaccine for it, what's that going to be for? Is that going to be for Lyme? Is that going to be for, anaplasmosis or babesiosis or Lyme and different strains of Lyme too? It's so broad that it's hard to narrow it down.
Yeah, that's what I want to get.
I'm just saying, it's tough to limit that.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to just have somebody else say it because I say the same thing. It's just one of them things. I mean, people think, oh, I can take a vaccine or a pill and I don't get ticks on me anymore. Well, no, it doesn't work like that. But
No.
it's the diseases you need to be concerned about. And you'd have to get a pill, if you will, for every one of those diseases. And that just
Yeah.
it doesn't work that way. So
It's not a one size fits all is what we're trying to say.
yeah.
It's not that simple. Our society is so used to taking a pill for everything that we think we can do that, to ward off ticks too. Well, I don't think so.
Right.
We have to learn to kind of live with them and like what they're learning right now, ways to stay away from them. What's the best, prevention? Even given all the best prevention, if I do get bit, what do I do? That's what I try to, cover, like we're covering right now, given the whole scope of it. So,
Sure.
definitely.
So what have we missed talking about? That's my high points that I wanted to hit. What do we miss that we should be talking about?
Man, those are definitely some of the most important things right there.
I definitely, before we get out of here, I want you to tell everybody how to get in contact with you. So we'll do that in a minute. But what are we missing as it relates to ticks? We've talked about preventing them without any repellents. We've talked about avoiding them. We've talked about what types of ticks are out there, what to look for, how to extract them. We've talked about the repellents now. Yeah. Have we missed anything? You're the tick man.
Yeah, those are a lot of people don't realize that they're actually a part of the arachnid family because they have eight legs. They're not insects. I know natural enemies for ticks even. I didn't talk about
Oh,
that just
yeah.
for ticks also have enemies. They have like enemies are like ants, spiders, praying mantis, grasshoppers, centipedes, and then you have some birds that will eat them too. Then you have the poultry family, which is really kind of unique. You have like chickens, guinea hens, and turkeys. Guinea hens, they say, really do the job on ticks. People who live in a rural area, they have guinea hens running all around, and man, they eat up a lot of ticks. the state of Maine did a study a number of years ago on turkeys and ticks, and they found that turkeys, when they go through the woods, have what they call as a voracious appetite. I mean, they are like pigs with wings. I mean, they eat the ants and the spiders and the praying mantis and the grasshoppers, some of the natural enemies of the ticks, plus they do eat ticks. So they were saying in their study that they think that the turkeys are actually having a reverse effect on the ticks because they're eating more of their natural enemies. So ticks have fewer enemies. So ticks are able to thrive even more because they have less enemies to eat them.
Oh, wow.
Because of the turkey. I mean, who would have thought that, you know?
Wow. Interesting.
Yeah, I know. I thought that was crazy, but
I noticed you didn't mention the social media bullcrap of possums eat 5 billion ticks a day or whatever. Because I know that's
they,
been
they
making
can eat ticks, but yeah, I've heard those different things about possums too.
Yeah, they don't eat ticks the way everybody makes them out to be on social media. They think they're a godsend for ticks, but I mean they eat them, but yeah. Not like
yeah, they'll eat them, but I don't think I've heard those different. Stories like that where they're not probably eating them as much as people give them credit for. I wish they did, you know.
Right, sure.
That's for sure.
All looking right. Through my
different notes here. Yeah, those are probably I know. Also as far as back to permethrin, I it's such a cool product. I call it vitamin P for your clothes.
Yeah.
There's no such thing, but the heavier it's sprayed on, the longer it will last. I tell people you can spray your boots, socks, pants, shirts, you know, gear, tents with it also too.
Mm-hmm.
And don't spray on your skin because it's useless on your skin. You know, I always, you know, look at the, you know, read the safety directions, instructions like that, and things of that nature. But it's some great stuff. I'm a real permethrin guy, as you can tell. And,
sure.
And I know you are too, because there's nothing better than that. And you don't have to put it on every day. I have my outdoor clothes that I use on a regular basis.
Same.
And those are the ones I treat, you know, my shoes, socks, pants,
yep.
Outer stuff. You don't need to do underwear. If you really want to keep ticks off, you can wrap your pant legs, you know, tight or pull your socks, you know, put your pants into your socks to keep them on the outside to force them to walk on the pants. Spraying your shoes too, definitely, absolutely. Don't forget to spray your shoes and shoelaces, because like I was saying here a while back, that the size, the tick a size of a poppy seed could be on a shoelace. But mm-hmm. if that was treated with permethrin, especially at a poppy seed size, that could really work against their body, and chances are they would be not up to ever getting to your skin to cause a problem because of that.
Ooh,
treatment.
I knew one we haven't talked about yet. What about our pets? What about when we take our dogs with us? Is there anything that we can do other than what the vet offers us?
Those are a good thing. I usually tell people to go back to their vet. Some people do spray their dogs with permethrin.
That problematic?
No, but I want to say something first, though. Don't ever spray it on cats or bees or fish or anything like that, because it's really bad for them. But as far as dogs go, there's so many different things you can use on dogs. Permethrin is one of them that you could if you wanted to. You would just be careful when you spray it on. A lot of times people start at the tail and to kind of fluff the fur backwards as they're spraying it on. Be very careful with their genitalia underneath, you know, and more of the tender areas like that. I wouldn't spray it there. Mm-hmm. Sometimes people will put a handkerchief, you know, around a dog's neck. And they may even treat that with permethrin too.
Hmm. That's a good idea. I never thought about that. That is a good idea.
So you can kind of rub permethrin into them, but there's so many other good things that you can use on them. Pills that they can take, you know, if they mm-hmm. bite them, they die or things like that. But some kind of spray on their, you can buy, I think even handkerchiefs, you know, around their necks.
Mm-hmm. And one word of caution for those listening that know me and know Tracker, my dog that goes with me all the time. Tracker develops seizures from the oral meds that we utilized on him. And that's something you should talk to your vet about, because some dog breeds have very serious problems with oral tick medication. And Tracker and I go to the woods every day, so he and I both are going to get ticks on us. So we make sure that we have the topical applicant for him, and that doesn't seem to cause any problems, but he did develop seizures on the oral meds. And when we stopped him, he stopped.
Huh. Well, that's good.
Yeah, that's another one. Things to, if people are listening, they're not aware of that. I'm not a vet, so I do know that a lot of the herding breeds have that issue. He's an Australian Shepherd, so something to chat with your vet about to help keep the ticks off of them. Man, this has been good, Brian. You got a book? You got a website? Tell us about it.
Yeah, I got the book here called "Winning the War on Ticks." I published it last. It came out last summer, and actually, I was going to call it "Ticks Suck."
Oh man, did you self-publish that, or did a publisher do it?
Well, no, I got outvoted by the two most important women in my life. My wife, she didn't like the title, and my mom, who helped edit it, they said, "You got to change it." So, anyways, it's called "Winning the War on Ticks."
Okay,
it's got my story behind it there too. About how I've come about, you know, I tell people in order to be the tick terminator like me, you got to be a little strange, you got to be a little weird, and you got to have an unusual fascination with those gall darn stinking little blood sucking varmints we call ticks. And then you just described me, but
that's you, huh?
you got to feel sorry for my wife because she's been with me for 45 years now, we've married. So, anyways, it's yeah, a lot of fun.
It's a good
really
book, everybody. Everybody listening, I've read the book. It's a good book, or I wouldn't have had Brian on. I think it's fantastic. Pick it up.
Good. Yeah, it's on Amazon. You can get it there. Mm-hmm. So anyway, yeah, I'm glad you read it, and that's a good one there. So, yeah.
And the website, what's the website?
The Tick Terminator, theTickTerminator.com.
And for those listening and watching, look in the description below. I have a direct link. All you can do is click it and go there. I'll make sure I get that up there for Brian.
Yep.
Are you on social media and all that craziness?
Yeah, I do some with YouTube. I have a YouTube channel.
Okay. I'll link to that too.
And I do some Instagram too. And just for fun. I mean, I need to do more of that. But, you know, to give out, when I started with Instagram was last fall, or both of them, I talk about ticks every month. I started, I think, in September. Ticks in September, ticks in November, ticks in December, every month so far. And I need to do one now for April. And just how ticks respond, and just a little blurb. It's only 1 minute, but
awesome.
I'll be doing more stuff with that as time goes on here.
So, what's your Instagram handle? Tick Terminator.
Tick Terminator 1, I think is what it is.
Okay. And
same when people
for
finally found it, when they find the TickTerminator.com and YouTube, when they find the tick in the shape of a hand grenade, they know they came to the right place.
Okay.
Because that's my logo.
Okay.
Because it's a war out there. It's a war out there. So that's
good.
That's,
I dig it.
Works well for me. So trying to teach people about the enemy is what I tell them. So.
Well, this has been good, Brian. Anything else that we've missed?
Well, I just got a poem at the end here.
There it is. Lay this poem on me you told me about.
There it is. I hate them little suckers. I want to terminate them all. So I do with permethrin and love to watch them fall. From head to toe, I spray the stuff, my shoe, socks, clothes, and hats, because it works on more than ticks, like skeeters, chiggers, and even gnats. So I ask you, if you're listening, to keep away from Lyme, get started with permethrin, and now is the perfect time. Thank you.
That's so awesome. Oh, man, who else would have a good poem about ticks than the Tick Terminator? Ryan. That's
you gotta
good,
have fun.
Yeah, heck yeah, man. Yeah, I'm glad you enjoy your work. That's good stuff. Thanks for your time today, Brian. This has been great.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, Craig.
Yeah, the timing is right. I usually take a couple of weeks to get stuff out, but I'm going to do everything I can to get this out in the next day or so, because ticks are everywhere right now. So
yeah.
We'll get the information out. So thank you for your time, and I'll get it out, and I'll shoot you an email when everything's live.
That'd be great.
All right, everybody, this has been Craig Cottle and the Tick Terminator. So come on, join in. Let's learn together. And that wraps up another fantastic episode of the Nature Blinds podcast. I hope today's journey has inspired you to explore and connect with the natural world in new and exciting ways. Before I say goodbye, remember to check out the Nature Blind School online membership. If today's episode sparked your interest in wilderness skills and outdoor adventures, this online community is the perfect place for you to start or continue your journey. You can currently sign up for a year for only $99 and get 2 months for free.
Click the link below to discover a world of expert-led courses, engaging content, and a vibrant community eager to share their knowledge and experiences. Whether you're starting your outdoor journey or looking to deepen your existing skills, the Nature Reliant School online membership is here to guide you. Thank you for joining us today. Don't forget to subscribe for more adventures and share this podcast with your fellow nature enthusiasts. Until next time, come on, join in. Let's learn together.